Hey, how you doing? Daniel Ruiz Tyson is available for Monday, the 21st of July, 2014, with me, Daniel Ruiz Tyson, coming to you live at 10 o'clock on Resonance 104.4 FM. London's worst-dressed radio host here. I've never gone into the summer with such a limited wardrobe. I might have to borrow a Resonance t-shirt next week just so Chris sees me in something different soon. Or, you know, I may need to engineer a situation where I can show Chris pictures of days gone by where I had a more expansive wardrobe. To make matters worse, I have to turn up in the studio looking like this when Johnny Mugwump and his super trendy crew were playing their tunes. I felt like the middle-aged neighbour there, knocking on the door, asking them to turn the music down, and all these people born after Live Aid are just glaring at me, and there I am in my specially made insoles. How are you, South London? Hope you're all well. On this week's show, the penultimate available of the series, I'm saying no to the Lambeth Country Show. There's this week's Nectar Points update, and we're back in the cafe that holds out against all the sweeping changes taking place in SW8, like Asterix's village against the Romans, from where I'll be looking at how shrinking accommodation is likely to impact on the country's hat industry. That's all on this week's Daniel Ruiz Tyson is available, going out to all 12 South London and boroughs. And remember, this is live radio. It's not a podcast. It is happening now. I'm at a real life radio station with hair so big I can't even get my headphones on. I haven't imagined this. The best way to be involved with the show is to listen to it live on a Monday night at 10 p.m. You have an opportunity to interact with the show live every week. You can follow me on Twitter at 1607 West Egg. Get in touch on there between now and 10:30. I'll be taking your tweets, or alternatively email the show, DRT, available at westegg1607.co.uk. Let me just tell you, on my way here, waiting for my bus, a grown man on a child's bike did a 10-second wheelie. I was the only witness, wasn't sure if I was meant to applaud. Why do guys do that? Has a woman ever called a man doing a wheelie back and demanded to know more about him, demanded to have a date with him? I don't get it. So it's been a week of crazy hot weather, making for long sleepless nights and rendering my bouffant rather fluffy. All too often in my life, I've allowed my hairstyle to become badly dated. I get to within three or four of the most fashionable hairstyles, maintain it for a year, and then I let it slide back into bouffanted obscurity. There are men going round right now wearing Blue Harbour Range elasticated chinos with more fashionable hair than me. How can that be? I could watch the first year of NYPD Blue from 94 all over again and not see any hairstyle that looks as bad as what I have on my head presently. How can that be? 10 years from now, some cliched Shoreditch hipster will revive my current badly dated hair. My bouffant will become the new beard. I think it might be a sign of middle age. You begin caring less about hair. You begin caring less about music too, I've noticed. Music might be the big one. I'm so out of touch now with what's in the charts. I don't even know if there are charts anymore. I saw an ad for Now 88 on TV last night. I think Now 6 was the last one I bought. Might have had Taylor Dane on it. I got suspended from school the day I bought Now 6. And I was watching this ad last night and I was thinking, what rubbish are these children singing? They all sound the same. Videos full of choreography that should have died with Five Star in the mid-80s. And I think when you think like that, you know your time as a young person is effectively done. What else has been happening? Well, I took an absolute mauling on a well-known South London online forum when I posted a link to the show tonight. Admittedly, without being a long-time member, it is hard to get any publicity for the show, particularly somewhat bizarrely and disappointingly in South London, where I don't feel too many people are doing this kind of thing. So you try to grow something out at hyper-local level, at the expense of your old audience, perhaps, and you don't get very far. So I thought, let me sign up to this influential website. I'll publicise the show on there and get involved in other postings on there so I don't understandably get accused of spamming. Boy, did that backfire. It was like an initiation ceremony into a gang where you get a good kick in before you become a fully fledged member. They really did go for me. It reminded me of the time when I was doing my first ever podcast from the hotel with Mickey Boyd a World Cup ago. We We publicised the show on another site and those guys really went for us too. Even said things about our mums. Mickey went mad when I told him. He pulled his cab over when I was on the phone explaining things to him. He was threatening to find these posters and sort them out. I had to explain to him what trolls were to the man who these days is almost the troll under the stairs with his current bathroom arrangements. Mickey was he was furious. I was trying to calm him down. I didn't want him getting into trouble. When martial arts experts get into a street fight, they're supposed to warn their opponent they are a black belt in whatever discipline. Similarly, by law, Mickey is required to let his opponents know he is part Neanderthal. The big Popeye forearms, thought by paleoanthropologists to be a result of a life spent stabbing woolly mammoths and early elephants to death and pulling apart their carcasses, and the classic strong trapezius, deltoid and tricep muscles, a legacy of dragging 50 pounds of meat to his new lodging on the borders of southeast London, which makes him a formidable opponent for any Homo sapien. So Mickey needs to declare all that power in advance, but in the heat of the moment, he often forgets. So I'd long wanted to join this forum simply because whoever's behind the site has, over the years, taken some brilliant pictures of Vauxhall and Nine Elms that capture the area and the changes sweeping through the area better than anyone else has, I think. And I tried to get them on the show to do a South London in 60 seconds. I don't think that's going to happen now. I feel like any future posts now as I try to prove I'm committed to their online community for the long term is going to come across as what the kid used to term back in the day, a tryhard. I'm going to be like the guy who's told by their partner they never go out anywhere or never buy them flowers, and suddenly I'm turning up at the studio apartment with as many flowers as you can get for £3. It's just not going to wash with them. In other news, I've watched almost all of the first series of Penny Dreadful alone too. I normally don't do horror. I don't do well with horror, particularly vampires. When I was 8, I borrowed the unabridged version of Bram Stoker's Dracula from my older cousin. And I'd be up at 6 in the morning. I've always been an early bird. Breakfasting with my parents, having the first coffees and a glass of my life, all three of us overstirring our coffees. Me reading this horror novel from start to finish, right in front of them. Every page put in the fear of God into me. Now, I know there was a language barrier. My parents were Spanish, but Dracula is Dracula in most languages. And the book said Dracula on the cover. They'd have seen my book. ¿Qué es lo que está leyendo? What's he reading? They might have inquired. Dracula. Similar, eh? I'm 8 years old. That book should have been taken away from me. Maybe the stress of trying to get into a communal bathroom shared with 11 other people outside our family caused them to take their eye off the ball. That's the last time I'm going to mention the Count by name, by the way, because that book did give me a lifelong aversion to the Count. The bulk of my nightmares as a kid were either related to the Count or Planet of the Apes. As recently as Christmas 2009, I was still being chased by the Count in my nightmares. So with that troubled history with the Count, I was surprised to enjoy Penny Dreadful as much as I did. The title refers to the Penny Dreadfuls, the 19th century cheap and sensationalist British publications. The series draws upon many characters from 19th century Irish and British fiction, including Dorian Gray from Oscar Wilde's The Picture of Dorian Gray, Mina Harker and Van Helsing. And it is, for me, outstanding, particularly the story arc involving the hunt for the missing Mina Harker. The fifth episode, which basically focuses on the backstory to the disappearance of Mina, is an hour of brilliant writing. Timothy Dalton, the only Bond I ever liked, is superb as explorer Malcolm Murray, father of Mina. He's got this fantastically thick graying beard too. That's the only thing I'm looking forward to about growing old. That type of beard depth that has to date eluded me. But I've noticed as you get older, beard thickness goes up a level, so I'm hopeful of emulating that beard. A very good show. Glad it's been recommissioned, though predictably I have had trouble sleeping after watching it.
Daniel Ruiz Tyson. He's so available.
The time now is 9 minutes past 10. You're listening to Daniel Ruiz Tyson is available with me, Daniel Ruiz Tyson, live on Resonance 104.4 FM, the voice of the windowless bathrooms pockmarking South London. Remember, You can support Resonance by visiting resonancefm.com and making a donation. Resonance is London's most original radio station. It's staffed by volunteers and does need your support. You're not going to find a lot of these programs on Radio 4, so do please show your support for original programming. So while I was busy immersing myself in Penny Dreadful, the 40th Lambeth Country Show was underway. It won't surprise you to know I'm not an outdoor festival kind of guy. Personally, I don't know why anybody goes to these things. I went to my one and only country show in 1985 against my will. Even then, still a year away from my first rhinoplasty, I knew that day I would never go back. I didn't need to go again. I read the blurb on the posters for this year's country show. There was live music, animal parks, food stalls, garden displays, and the theme for the weekend was the 70s, 80s, 90s, and the noughties, with retro fancy dress encouraged. Fancy dress and karaoke, two more things I've never felt the urge to do. Unless they're going to stick me in some fancy dress costume at my funeral, I'll be meeting my maker, never having done fancy dress. I'm happy to go as badly dressed as this. You know, I knew back in 85 that I was never going to another Lambeth Country show again. Nothing has happened in the last 29 years to make me change my mind. I'd almost rather get a tattoo and sacrifice my originality than return to Brockwell Park. Why would you go to this? The country show should, like the World Cup, be once every 4 years. I'd accept it. I'd like kids, you know, I don't want the line of Ruiz Tizons to end like this. I don't want my huge underachievements to be the last thing appearing on this particular branch of the family tree when some future descendant with way too much time on their hands happens across my name. I want some kids on that next branch down who've outdone me in the mediocrity stakes. And if I had children, first thing I'd tell them once they started get into grips with language is we are never going to the Lambeth Country Show. If you ever see a poster for one of these things, don't even contemplate asking me. Maybe it's better I don't have kids. I think I'd be a boring dad, a natural extension of being a boring partner. My kids would already resent me because of being twice as old as all the other dads. They'd be getting abused on BBM by their peers. Your dad's older than Bruce Forsyth. The abuse would be along those lines. They'd be walking past a poster for the Lambeth Country Show. They'd say, but Dad, please can we go? Aswad are on. I can't do it, even if it was 1988 and Now 6 had just come out and Aswad were at their commercial peak. It's not happening. My kids would be changing their BBM status to, I hate my old dad. I'd live with that. I was in the Tate Library on South Lambeth Road, my favourite library, earlier today. Always remember to hand gel after handling any of the books, though having given them a few hundred books in the last couple of years, the need to hand gel after handling their books isn't as great as it once was. Maybe that's why I did it. Not because I was a philanthropist, but because I wanted to be in a library where I didn't have to worry too much about where the books had been read. They were my books. I knew where I'd read them. I know I don't read them where many tend to read their books. I know too that when I get on a bus, I always hand gel after handling any bus rails. The reason I was in there this afternoon was I was having problems renewing my books online. So I tried to call the library first, found their number online, but couldn't get through. But what bothered me was that I found my library appearing on the Vauxhall Village website. Vauxhall is not a village. I keep banging on about this, and it troubles me to think they may be trying to claim South Lambeth Tate Library for their faux village. I tweeted my distress this morning in regards to this, and at Column UA Suing, I'm not sure I've got that right, tweeted back, there needs to be a firm village watch campaign. I've seen someone try to push a Tooting village in North Mitcham. I think that may fall in the borough of Merton, which we, as you know, do not recognise, Colin, but it is another example of the stunts many areas south of the river are trying to pull. Too many areas with delusions of grandeur are trying to reposition themselves. Hedon Istel tweeted, Vauxhall is one of the least villagey places ever. If there is a series after the summer, we're going to need to deal with this, South London. This is the enemy within. The changes, massive changes at that, taking place in Vauxhall and Nine Elms are essentially, I think, an opportunity to move on a poor, unsightly community and in its place bring in a new, prettier and well-heeled one. A community is slowly being displaced and we're left with fat, greedy developers telling us that the places we grew up in are really villages. it is news to me. Brixton was on my doorstep for 28 years. I had no idea it was a village. My aunt lived there for 20 years. She got her perms done in Brixton until the mid-90s. I don't think she knew it was a village. One of my best friends has lived there since 76. I don't think even he knew Brixton was a village. Now Vauxhall is a village. Stockwell next, I guess. Though it pleases me to see that square they recently built off Stockwell Station in Binfield Road already has its new seats occupied by the local drunks. Stockwell is the foul-mouthed Calamity Jane of South London. The developers are going to have their work cut out, changing SW9. This week's Nectar Points update now. I finished last week on 223 points worth £1.11. This week, 10 points gained on a £5.80 spend. Some vitamin C and effervescent zinc tablets, some hand wash, toothpaste, and a 75p coconut-scented hand wash on special offer, which may give you some idea of my scent tonight. The 10 points bring me up to 233 points, worth around £1.16, I think. That's as much as I can do right now. I remember before doing this later shot, I told myself I'd take a bag with me. Would have been good to get a point on the board for a bag reuse to reacquaint myself with the good shopping patterns of old. Remember my halcyon high accruing Nectar Point days of the spring. But it completely slipped my mind. Just disappointed generally, really, with my below-par Nectar Points performances this last couple of months. A final Nectar Points update next week. Coming up to 16 minutes past 10. A lot to get through. Not sure I'm going to make it. Move it on. Yesterday, 20th of July, was the 33rd anniversary of an incident that has long remained with me. That day, I went with my family to Spain. It is 1981. John McEnroe has just won Wimbledon for the first time, finally toppling Bjorn Borg after the Swedes' five successive wins. Aston Villa have won their first title in 71 years. Liverpool, despite a torrid season, have managed to win their first ever League Cup and beaten Real Madrid in Paris to secure their third European Cup win on the 27th of May, the day I lost my first ever digital watch on the Angel Town estate in Brixton within a month of getting it. And June finally saw me sneak off behind my dad's back and get my first ever short back and sides so I could look like a normal boy after being mistaken once too often with my long hair for a girl. I was like Pinocchio. I just wanted to be a boy. And elsewhere in the southeast of England, there was a year-old child taking their first steps in the world. Little did I know that 33 years on, they would be engineer number one. Man in the Desk, as a criminally underrated comedy radio show, went out to South London. 1981 was possibly the greatest summer of my life, certainly the greatest summer of my young life. I keep saying the great summers live on with us. They can and often do come to define us. 81, while it eventually lived with me for all the right reasons, it got off on a bad note, though. My dad was a long-term devotee of the mullet. Didn't want me having a short back and sides, and he was still furious and barely talking to me as we minicabbed it to Gatwick at 6:30 in the morning on Monday, the 20th of July, 81. My dad didn't come on holiday with us. Just like me now, he wasn't one for holidays. So it's just my mum, my younger sibling, and myself in my new short back and sides going. Our flight was going to Malaga. Now, the border with Gibraltar had been closed since the late 60s, I think. My dad was from the last Spanish town in southern Spain, La Línea, the line, which I always thought was a great name for a place. There was no Spain after La Línea. That was it. All the summers I spent in Spain were in the shadow of the spectacular rock. Gibraltar itself, I always found to be a bit of a disappointment. The rock wasn't, though. My dad's childhood home was about a minute away from the border with Gibraltar. When he worked in Gibraltar, he actually had to get a boat to Morocco just to get to his job in Gibraltar, and then to get back home, another boat, all this despite living just a minute away. And here's me making a big deal about the two buses I have to get to make it to Resonance every Monday. So it was a very strange scenario. All of which meant a 90-minute car ride for us from Malaga Airport in the middle of the afternoon, in that scorching Andalusian sun, to get my mum's sleepy fishing village of Imbres, Puente Mayorga, several kilometres from La Línea. I was all the more uncomfortable as my dad had brought me a light green towel, short sleeve top with large white collars from C&A in Marble Arch. I think that's where Primark is these days. I don't think these towel tops have been fashionable for years. I suspect they may not even have been fashionable even in the early 80s. Back in those days, though, through to young adulthood, really, I would get car sick without fail. But for some reason that day, I remember I didn't. We hadn't been on holiday for a few years. It was maybe the distraction of seeing Spain again that meant I felt okay in the car. I had vague recollections of the last time I was there, wearing a white Stetson I'd won at a fairground that my dad then made me wear in London. So it was very much new to me. The Stetson, by the way, went down better in Spain than it did in South London. After an hour and a half, around 3 o'clock Spanish time, I think, we arrived at my aunt's in Spain, just as the car was pulling up into the road. I remember my sibling just turning to me. We were sat in the back of the car, and my sibling turned to me and just vomited on me. Bad enough to have someone being sick on you, but imagine for a moment wearing a towel top in that type of Mediterranean heat at the height of summer, and then someone is sick on that type of uncomfortable fabric too. I was horrified. I got out of the car like the Tin Man. I think it was 28 years before I walked as awkwardly as that. And that was when I got those ill-thought slim-fit jeans that confirmed my midlife crisis. By the time we got to the door, the vomit had essentially toasted itself on my towel top. I never forgot that afternoon. I never forgot how uncomfortable that top felt. Meeting cousins I barely knew covered in puke was not the way to meet anyone, let alone family. Unsurprisingly, I never wore that top again. 20th of July, 81. A very brief email now from Polly. I saw a full weave on the floor in Peckham at the weekend, she says. Thank you for that, Polly. Let's hope that weave never gets worn again. When I get emails from listeners after checking if there are any naughty words that need omitting before I read them out on air, I just copy and paste the emails on my show notes, and it's always interesting to see what fonts listeners use to correspond. Polly is a Georgia 12 kind of girl. She never did get in that item on laundrettes either. Pens now, the Hall of Fame. Over the last few weeks, listeners have been submitting their favourite pens. Eamon, luxurious Victorian bearded friend of the show, has already submitted a couple of entries over the last month. Firstly, the fine tip biro, and then a couple of weeks back, he made a case for the Parker fountain pen. This week, Eamon is back with an email typed in Calibri 11, which is incidentally my own favourite font. I did have a Bookman old style 11 period in the early noughties. Eamon says, I shall miss the show when it's gone, so fill the void ASAP, please. Anyway, I thought I'd go for a pen hat trick after being reminded of a great pen. Back in the rave days, we had a terrible unscrupulous landlord. I don't think I'm going to get that word correct tonight, who decided to evict all of us with 3 days' notice. Illegal, but what could we do? So we cleared out the house and were about to leave when we found the big neon UV light we would occasionally stick in the kitchen for parties and so on. Then my mate then produced a fat tip UV pen, invisible to the naked eye, but luminous under UV light. Armed with a pen, we wrote, Mr. Whelan is a pixie-faced expletive, in letters 3 foot high, and left. I would have loved to have been there when he came into the empty building, switched on the kitchen light, and saw the glowing blue message that adorned the seemingly tidy house. That's me, out of pen stories. Thank you, Eamon. I can only dream of one day leaving such a message behind for a landlord. One more week left for your pen hall of fames. Tweet them at 1607 West Egg, hashtag pensfame, or email them to drtavailable westegg1607.co.uk, hall of fame in the subject header.
Would you not recognise the borough of Merton?
We most certainly do not, and we're quite right not to. And I say it every week, we shouldn't feel bad about it. 23 minutes past 10, time to start getting rid of some stuff from this week's show. You're listening to Daniel Ruiz Tyson, is available on Resonance 104.4 FM with me, Daniel Ruiz Tyson, one of just 200 and three non-tattooed men now left in South London. 9 South London men have now had tattoos in the last fortnight, seduced by the chance to show off their cliched inked biceps in the glorious weather. No long-term thinking. I anticipated this, so I'm not too worried. A surge in tattoos during the summer was always going to happen. These figures will stabilise during the winter as people put their skin away. By the way, remember the podcast is out from the early hours of Tuesday morning. Meantime, tonight's show will appear on Resonance's SoundCloud page right after this, and also gets another airing on Resonance on Friday at 5 p.m. Let's pop into the cafe now, the South Lambeth Road Portuguese cafe that has effectively been my home for the last 13 years and serves, in my opinion, the best coffee in London. A cafe where the men are men. There is no waxing or veeting in there, just men looking like early man. A cafe, too, struggling to adapt to the new digital age. Time was when people would go there and ask for a coffee. Now the first thing they ask is often, you have Wi-Fi? Just a very fleeting visit to the cafe last week, owing to time. So let's catch up with our regulars as much as we can, time permitting. Cosmetically enhanced mum and her ailing husband were in the cafe every afternoon last week. Sat in the sun, she in her big trilby felt with a moulded crown she does like hat. She was flicking through a glossy magazine on one of the days, probably sourcing her next nose or mouth. I wonder if her husband gets a say in the next design. You'd think he would, especially if he is bankrolling it. And the lips, after all, his own mouth will be making contact with it. I was looking at her large hat and it got me thinking whether the makers of wide brim trilbies, one of the more flamboyant hats on the market, will take into account that 30 years from now, many new hat adopters will be living in cramped studio flats. I'm guessing that in the last 5 years since the economy went into meltdown, there are so many big hats out there effectively made redundant by many of us having had to downsize. If I was with Cosmetically Enhanced, you'd have to lose the hats. Otherwise, we'd be on top of one another in my tiny hallway, surrounded by all our white goods in the one room. The hat would just look absurd. Several future me alerts this week for new listeners. Where you've been? Hey, the series is almost done now. Future me is the old man I fear becoming, always alone, just 35 years older, and it strikes me that we appear to be at different ends of the same life. First alert, Thursday, 17th of July. Future me was there when I arrived at 10:43 hours, exited at... he didn't exit at 11:12 hours. He actually pinched a copy of the Metro newspaper from another table. I noticed his left hand was shaking badly as he gripped the paper, perhaps not unlike Nick MB's hand back in his days using the Pilot V5 High Tech Point liquid ink rollerball pen he submitted as his Hall of Fame pen, even 3 shows back. Moving on now. The Sunday Correspondent was in with his friends, the two local Central European artists who I've mentioned before. The artist guy, probably in his 80s, woman, still very glamorous. Veteran waitress, perhaps of the local art world, with cleaner fingernails too, is considerably younger than him. I suspect she's probably his muse and enthralled to him. The two artists are as inseparable as magpies. She's always in a beret. Not a hat, unlike the trilby, that needs to be sensitive to shrinking accommodation. The beret is my least favourite hat, by the way. I just find the beret a little pretentious, gets my back up. I once went out with a girl that turned up for our one and only date in a beret. As soon as I saw the hat, I knew it was over. I looked at the beret, I thought, this is a problem. She's going to want to go to art galleries, and I don't fit into that world too comfortably in expensive restaurants reviewed in Time Out where people eat rice with their hands. In the end, I was grateful she wore the hat. It let me know I was going to be out of my comfort zone. Let's put up a chair quickly now for Twitter great at Billy2Rivers9 and Ariel10 and all too irregular show contributor this series. Emailed in on the subject of his least favourite hat after I asked on the blog for listeners to submit their least favourite headgear. Hi, Daniel. A bit of an unusual nomination, but my least favourite hat is the Roman helmet. At the tender age of just 8 years old, our school teacher, Mrs. Parrott, had somehow acquired one and let each member of the class try it on. When it came to my turn, the helmet didn't quite fit due to me having a slightly unusual shaped crown. Instead of just removing the ill-fitting helmet and discreetly moving on to the next pupil, she let out a raucous laugh and proclaimed, "Ha ha ha, look class, 2Rivers could never join the Roman cavalry due to his head being too big." Warmest regards from the East Midlands, 2Rivers. That is why we love him. Back in the cafe next week. That is me this week. Please support the show. Get on the blog, 1607westegg.wordpress.com. Click on the PayPal link if you'd like to support the show. Follow me on Twitter at 1607westegg. Coming up after this, the gravy, new electronic music with glowing palms. I feel like the filling in a very trendy music sandwich tonight. Thanks to my engineer this week, engineer number one, Chris Dixon. This is the Brilliant Keyboard Choir with Skylab. Shoulders back, South London. Keep on walking towards the sun. Remember, tiny accommodation cannot hold your dreams back. I'm back next Monday for the last show in this run, 10 p.m. Tune in, say goodbye. You'll miss me when I'm gone. I'm Daniel Ruiz-Tyson, and this week I have been available.